Bam, there it is. What's up, Reptiles Unplugged family? Thank you guys for joining us tonight. My name is Adam, Beach Bum Exotics. Thanks for everybody tuning in live on YouTube. And thank you to all of our listeners that are replay gang, catching us on our different platforms, podcast, all that. I got my co-host with me, Shane. Introduce yourself, my friend.
My name's Shane from Small Town Exotics, and I'm happy to be here. I'm going to plug myself a little bit, smalltownexotics.com, Patreon, and Instagram, as well as Jay Greenline Morphs, our technical producer. You can find him on Instagram and Morph Market.
Bam. Thank you, sir. We have a great show coming up tonight, but before we get into that, we're going to catch up a little bit. So, Shane, how you been, man? You been good this week?
Yeah, you look like a different Adam that I had on here last week.
Well, you had the proper Adam on last week. You got the bum on tonight. So, yeah. You know, I don't know. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. You guys killed it last week. And thank you guys. You know, Adam, thank you if you're out there listening or catching this for filling in. It was my wife's birthday last week. I won't say her age, but it was a good birthday. We went out to Catalina Island. Ate some good food, had some, you know, awesome times. So it was great. And thank you. Probably highlight of that trip would have been our falconry experience. So we got to see a bunch of falcons fly and a bunch of cool hawks, learn about some owls and some stuff like that. So,
yeah, that sounds really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. We'll have to get into it maybe next week on our recap and everything like that. So, but yeah, good. What's up?
I was going to say, I kind of like thought I might want to get into falconry at one point, and then I learned how many rats they eat. And I was like, oh, dude. No, snakes are enough, man. I like snakes right? are good. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a serious thing. And I mean, you're working them for long periods through the day. It's daily work. It is a ton of work, but super rewarding. And something cool I learned was in the city of Avalon on Catalina Island, they employ the Falconry Conservative place to keep out the pest birds, so all the pigeons and the seagulls from Main Street and the beach. So I thought that was pretty cool. They bring one of the Harris hawks out there, and he just does work flying around the street. And those other birds, man, they split the second that they see him. So pretty cool.
That's good. I'm not fond of seagulls, so that's good.
Yeah, if you've ever lived by the beach, you definitely are not fond of seagulls. they're flying rodents, man. Totally. Well, I'm beyond excited. So, and I know we've got a lot to talk about tonight. Do you want to bring in our guest? I'll let you introduce them and all that good stuff.
All right. What's up?
Hey, guys.
We got Josh and Alicia here, the Herp and Harbins, and I'm sure you guys all know of the Herp and Harbins. They're doing the circuits recently. I didn't know that they were going to have so much TV time over the past couple weeks. So congratulations on that.
We don't coordinate it. People say, want to do a podcast? Yeah.
We were so excited about this one last night. We had it all set up about 7 o'clock last night. Couldn't figure out why where Shane was and where Adam was. He sent a picture to Shane. He's like, what are y'all doing? We're like, isn't it tonight? He's like, no. We were a little off.
It was a dry run.
Better early than late, right? It could have been really bad if it was tomorrow and y'all were like. But thank you guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, it would have been bad news if we showed up and we're live without you and you're the featured guest, you know. So
that would look weird.
Yeah.
Do some impersonations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. We could have used some deep fake voices, you know, asked you guys some really embarrassing questions and
man, that stuff is scary nowadays. Yeah.
It is scary. Yeah. You don't know if it's real or not sometimes, right? And
yep.
Yeah. Totally.
I remember when I thought like Jurassic Park was amazing graphics. Now the stuff we're seeing, like, man, I don't know. I don't think that's that person doing that, but it sure looks like that person.
It sure looks real now.
Like I saw one like Elon Musk putting mask or makeup on Trump, and it was like bags of Cheeto dust, and he's brushing it on Trump. I'm like, man, I know that's not real, but it looks really real. Good.
You never know. I mean, that could be happening. That would be a sight to see right there. Oh, man. Dude, too good. Well, again, thanks everybody in chat for joining. We've got some, you know, a lot of people joining us tonight. Want to give a few shout outs. We've always got the first crew up in there, Steven, Brian. Shane somehow is always first or claims to be first. Jay's in chat, you know, we got Jason in chat. We got several. So thank you everybody for joining tonight. We've got some good conversation that we're going to be jumping into. I know, Shane, you and the Harbins here have a connection with each other. You guys live pretty close to each other and everything like that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to hear what you guys have.
We're about 15 minutes from each other.
Yeah.
Man, that's lucky. I don't have anybody close like that out here in Ventura. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
but, I bet they're out there. You got to do some digging. There's got to be snake nerds over there.
That, you know, there have been a few, but I, you know, that's my problem. You're right. I just kind of, I don't really reach out to a bunch of people. I got to get outside of my comfort bubble. So,
well, I think there's a little hotbed here in Knoxville. Honestly, when you think about it, there's all kinds of people in this area.
Yeah, like Brian and Beth Ann, the BC's Reptilia. That's actually one of my first, dad used me as a snake mule. We were down there in Alabama and visiting the family, and dad said, "Hey, can you run a snake back to Knoxville?" I'm like, "Sure." I was like, who is it? And he said, "Well, it's this guy named Brian, and y'all just set up a meetup." And so I'm texting this guy like, "Hey man, I got the stuff. Where you want to meet up?" like a Cracker Barrel
parking lot. And we're like, "Oh, here's the bags of snakes."
Been hanging out with Brian ever since.
Yeah.
Then his son just went to UT a couple years ago, and he's in the band. So now we tailgate with the Carters. I'm one of the parking garages before all the games. So that's been a lot of fun.
It's been fun. And then, like, you know, the hat makers with Muscles and Geeks, Spalls are in the area. The Gobbles are just down the road from here, and Gobble Reptiles and
Jamie and Carl.
You know, there's so many people. I forget like 20 people, but there's a lot of people in this area. So we've got a nice little hotbed in East Tennessee. So,
man, that's really cool. I love, that's, you know, I've always thought it would be pretty interesting living around a bunch of kind of snake nerds like us, you know, wherever you're just running into each other. You got the local shows. You guys have a pretty good show circuit out there too, right? From my understanding.
I mean, we haven't done the local ones as much lately. We've gone over to Charlotte with AARPE. We've done the Nashville one with AARPE. There is a couple of like circuits in Knoxville and in Chattanooga, but they've kind of just become a little oversaturated. They're a little bit smaller. And so
we're also running down to Alabama either almost every weekend. And so they need to be really quality shows and bring a lot of people through the door for us to make it worth setting up as many animals as we have right now. So as that slows down, as we get to some more manageable numbers, we'll probably do the Knoxville shows here and there just because people ask us all the time, "Are you going to be there this weekend?" I'm like, "No, we're going to Alabama or
we're out of town to another show for some reason." Yeah. So, there's still plenty of shows in the area, and it's fun. We get to set up with Shane most of the time. We're right next to him.
Right on.
We kind of set up next door to each other, and then we can watch each other's tables and stuff. And we also have the Southeast Reptile Expo. It's three and a half hours in Atlanta. So that's real close by too. So we got some good shows close.
Sweet, 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 sweet.
Yeah. I just wanted to say, they kind of alluded to it. Like they undersell what they do. Like if you knew half of the stuff that they do in real life and running back and forth and managing two collections, like they got the most grind of anyone I've met in the industry. I mean, that's some pretty hardcore dedication that they do. So not to embarrass you guys or nothing, but I'm just saying, like, man, then vend all of these shows everywhere and stuff too, on top of all that. That's gotta be rough, you know?
Yeah. It's been a hell of a year, I guess the best way to sum it up. But, you know, when Tom passed away, in our mind, like people kind of were like, you know, what are you just going to sell the collection? And we're like, that never crossed our minds to do that. Once. Not at all. It was like, okay, let's figure this out. How are we going to do this? We're not selling his collection. You know, we're not giving up on this. He would never want that. Cause we were as much into it as he was at that point.
We were actually in the process of like forming like an alliance with him, like trying to figure out how to co-brand and travel and do all the shows together. So there was about to be like a Harbin syndicate.
were going to call it that.
That's awesome.
my brother raised his crested geckos. And so the three of us entities were going to be able to set up like a whole end cap and just have a cool little family together. So
have a bunch of different species. Yeah. That's really cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
And just this last show in Nashville, my brother showed up and mom drove up to visit and hang out. So we got to kind of do a family thing. And I don't know if you can say a normalcy is back, but it's pretty close.
Yeah. That was the closest it'd been in a long time where we just were kind of, we were okay. You know, we're like, we got this, you know, and Ben did a good job. He sold a bunch of geckos as usual. Yeah. And it was nice to have Sarah there kind of just checking things out. And we try not to make her do anything, even though she's wanting to do stuff. But we're like, hey, you need a rest. You were on Tom's Hill for decades, and it's time for you to rest. You don't have to do this stuff anymore. Yep. So
she's
good at bringing the snacks to the show. Yeah, I mean, she brings enough calories for like a week.
But... hey, that's important. You know, at the shows, it's hard to get away sometimes.
It is
something to eat. So having somebody on snack duty, man, that's an important job right there. I was going to ask, so Josh, is your mom, is she into the reptiles? Does she like them herself or?
I think she tolerates them. She actually likes my brother's geckos. Like when Ben shows up, she's always over there fiddling with the geckos and scooching them around. Mom would mess with the corn snakes a little bit, but man, when it comes to the hognose and ball pythons, she didn't care. Much. Now she would help clean.
Yeah.
Like she's like a cleaner shrimp.
Yeah. So. As long as you pull the snake out, if you took the snake out, then she'd do all the cleaning inside the tub. So she would just wave over at me. I'd pull a snake out. She'd go clean it. And then I'd put it back in there. So, I mean, she did that and she has absolutely no problem with the corn snake. She asked me the last show, she's like, hey, which corn snake should I get out? I said, you know, any one of those are fine. So she got one and she just took off with it. And, but she is the rodent master.
Yeah.
The queen of rodents. I mean, she makes too many rodents.
Yeah. She's got like zero apps. Like she doesn't label anything. Like I'm having to
just all in her head.
Yeah.
And like, you don't have to fill up every tub. We don't need to recreate a new colony when this colony is retired. That's not in her vocabulary. So Josh and I just accept it. We're like, okay, we're just going to have way too many rodents at this point and we'll figure it out down the way and just let her keep cranking them out. Cause she's got it down pat.
Awesome. I think that's a good problem to have, right?
Yeah. And like people don't realize like in the background all these years with Tom, you know, that's who was taking care of all the rodents with Sarah and kept all that going for him. And of course he helped with it, but you know, not to the degree that she oversaw it. So,
and she grew up on a dairy farm. So, I mean, rat farming isn't a whole lot different. You don't have to milk them, but I mean, it's still the same premise.
That would be a little strange, you know, but
I think you need a tiny bucket, right? Just a little tiny bucket.
I need to AI that picture. That would be really funny.
I don't know. That may be bad. But she has goats too. And so she had a lot of baby goats this last year. And
she can grow some goats too. Man.
We were walking past one of the pastures today. The other day. And I looked over. I was like, is that Billy in with all those does again? And we're like, yeah. So I went inside and talked to her about it. I said, do you think we should take him out? What are we doing? And she's like, oh, I think I'm just going to go ahead and let him breed a few of them this year. Everybody. Oh, here's another like 30 baby goats this winter to deal with. Like, that's what she wants to do. That's what she wants to do. We'll be there to help her. So
that's awesome. So are you guys friends with Retic people? If you guys are breeding goats or.
No. We've got some friends that have some boas. Yeah.
We might need to be.
Friends at this point.
We do have a couple of boa people in town that when we retire rats, we'll call them up and say, hey, do you want the retireds, the jumbos?
Yeah, and those they take those. I feel pretty good about that. Like, I know it sounds silly to, like, you know, some people would just throw them away, but no, for me, those things have lived a really good life. They're still healthy. They just aren't producing anymore. And it could be somebody else's food. So it, you know, our friends that want those jumbos are thrilled to get them.
Well, it's a circle of life. I think it's crazy that people don't do stuff like, if you're throwing that away, that's a waste, right?
That's a waste. It's such a waste. And so we just have extra freezers and we just keep it stored. I send a message to the guy. He comes out here and picks up coolers full of jumbo rats and he's thrilled and I'm thrilled and, you know, it all works out and we don't feel wasteful.
So. And then he'll feed us. He'll take us out to eat or something. I'm like, that's a good trade right there.
Hey. Scratching your back. Yeah, that's awesome. That's how it goes. I just met a family that does a bunch of different chickens, right? And they, you know, you inevitably wind up with a bunch of roosters and you don't want a ton of roosters. And so every couple months we'll talk with each other and I'll come scoop up a bunch of under 5 pound roosters from them and they go to my retics and that's
perfect.
Yeah, it's great.
That's great, and, though. I mean, like, you know, it's not wasting at that point.
Not
you
wasting.
Got, you're getting what you need.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And the retics are getting a good, you know, they eat rodents, like they'll eat anything, but in the wild, they get more fowl. So it's nice to give them a lot
That's
of fowl.
True. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. Changing up the diet a little bit is beneficial anyway. So,
right. Pretty exactly. Cool.
Shane gets some of our leftovers too. Like we have a few extras. Like I need you to come help me clean out the freezer. He's like, okay.
Those are good friends to have, Shane.
Yeah, I'm like, you know, I'll take some bigger rodents, but I've kind of learned like 250 gram and below. Like 250 is kind of pushing it with my bigger ball pythons.
Those are too big. Like we don't even feed our big monarchs that. I'm like, nah, that's too much.
So well, you guys kind of alluded to all that going back and forth to Alabama, but you've recently started a project where you won't have to be going back and forth. Yeah. So do you guys want to elaborate on what you guys got going on over there?
Yeah, Dad and Mom moved to a big farm down in Alabama. That was their retirement farm. And there was a horse barn and Dad converted it to half of it to a wood shop and half to a snake barn. So we were always envious of his snake setup he had down there. It was really nice. He had a room just for the ball pythons, a room just for the hognose, a room just for the rodents. Like it's pretty pro. And when he passed, we were like, we're screwed. Like we don't have that.
Yeah, we don't have that capacity.
We had a room that was filled up, so we had to figure something out. So I started investigating all my options for what we could do. We had to make some kind of building. We looked at like the portables, like we could just drag it on the property and set it up. We looked at the little like do-it-yourself garage things, spraying the foam in it. We looked at building our own. And anyway, we settled on a metal building that's basically a really, really, really nice pole barn because they offered a energy efficient package. They're based out of Illinois where they get real snow. And so everything's snow load great, rated, thick walls.
Yeah, 6-inch thick, you know, full insulation, metal exterior. Beautiful looking exterior, too. We were able to pick out the colors that we wanted. And, you know, even the gutters match and all that. And so it looks good. We decided that based on all the things that we needed and how much we were going to have to put into these other prefabbed type of units, we were going to be putting a ton of money into those and a lot of extra work and not necessarily increasing the value of our property. And this building actually increases the value of our property, which, you know, ultimately you got to think about that when you have a house or business or own any property. And so if something ever happens or we just decide to move, you know, maybe we move in 10 or 15 years, this could easily be converted into like a normal person's place, like a garage or a workshop or something like that.
When we were calling and like getting permits, they're like, what are you building? I'm like, a workshop.
Yeah.
Like, I'm building a snake barn. Like, nobody knows what
that is. But we opted to go with like Morton Buildings is who we're using. And they've done an excellent job on just, you know, everything that they've done. But the total footprint is 64 by 40. but interior is 30 by 64. The back side of it is all a lean-to, covered lean-to area. So we've got 10 by 64 across the whole area so that we can put like mulch and, you know, all that stuff that we can store outside will be up underneath that lean-to, and we can access it through our concrete pad where we can pull up and have things delivered there. And so it's going to be very helpful.
The perk of that lean-to on the back is now we can pull the van right up beside that, roll things straight from the building, straight to the van, and never have to like go up and down any stairs or any kind of ramp. It's all flat.
It's everything's flat. So yeah,
man, your back and knees are probably clapping so loud right now.
Yeah. We're not young.
And we don't recover like we used to. And so it's definitely going to be much better. So we got some sealer in this weekend because all the concrete is interior and exterior concrete is down. So we're going to go ahead and seal the exterior concrete just so we have extra protection. We don't help us like if we pull stuff up on there and oil and things like that, that get on it, we can clean it off faster. But then we're actually going to stain the interior.
Shane, guess what color?
Orange.
Yes.
It's not orange. It's not like obnoxious orange, but it is a beautiful, like kind of deep mottled orange that we're going to do an acid stain and then seal the inside. And then once that's done, hopefully within the next week, then Josh and his friends, I'm not doing it. I'm clumsy and I can't lift anything, but they're going to start doing the walls on the interior. And then that way an electrician can come in and start running the wires and everything. So.
Man, that sounds awesome. I like it. Aesthetically pretty and functional. Hey, you guys are doing a good job.
Yeah, we're excited. Well, there's not a room in the house that doesn't have snake stuff in it. In this room is the other corners, the quarantine room. Every other room in the house has snakes.
Yeah, the office has the corn snakes and the incubators.
Incubators, yep.
This room, the dining room, actually has all this show gear and some sub-adult hog noses. And then we had to gut our master bedroom completely, put all the stuff in storage so we could move some more racks up. So most of all of Tom's adults that we're so far keeping back for breeding and all of his adult breeding hog noses are in that room with a few of the baby ball pythons still. And then our main reptile room has all of our hogs, all the hog babies and all the for sale baby ball pythons right now. And then a few of our adults. And so it's we're really just shoving them everywhere, literally.
Right.
And the garage is full of rats and dogs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gotcha. So the house is overflowing with animals.
I got to watch it progress. Like I'd come over and there'd be like another rack and another main part of the living room with more snakes. And it just like kept going and going. I'm like, these guys are dedicated right here. I like it. You know,
it actually worked out well because everybody asked us like, do we need help moving it all to Tennessee? Like everybody thought dad's gone. Like, let's just move it all at once. And we're like, we don't have anywhere to put it. Mm. And also we needed to learn his collection. So moving it up, like every time we've gone down there, we've always brought back, you know, 5 to 10 snakes. So it's been just a slow progression. Yeah. We can kind of sort and organize and it's been the right way to do it.
Yeah.
Cause I mean, you move a whole collection like that, you're going to kind of shell shock it and maybe reset it for several years.
Yep. Yeah. It was the hognose babies of his are the first that we moved up because they require so much more care. And it was the middle of the summer. And so we moved those immediately. And the baby corn snakes that were down there, we did move those. And so
the baby corn snakes.
That was a funny story. We did not move corn snakes from Alabama to Tennessee without a permit, by the way.
But luckily, she knows all the permits. I know all the permit stuff. So, I was like, how do I move 30 corn snakes all at once? We don't have that many containers ready. So I went and found a brand new 5-gallon bucket, drilled holes in the lid and put shavings down in there and then just started dumping corn snakes down in there. We get to Tennessee, I open the lid, I don't see a single corn snake in there. I'm like,
oh no,
there's 30 something corn snakes loose in this van. And all of a sudden, all these little heads just sprout up like little flowers coming out of the dirt. And these little adorable corn snake babies just poking up out of the ground. It's like, oh, I need to get some water and grow them.
I mean, they're not even bigger than like an earthworm at this point. And, you know, if we were in our right mind, we were still just so like, we were just messed up. Yeah. And if we'd had any gumption, we would have taken videos and pictures because it was one of the funniest things looking back. It was probably one of the happiest moments we'd had
Those baby corns have those big googly baby eyes.
Yeah, they're just they're like staring at you.
And their little heads are popping out. And so, but that was kind of a funny moment. But so we moved those immediately. And then we literally did not even start moving adult ball pythons until, what, like 3 months ago? Something like that?
Yeah.
Because we didn't need them. We were like, you know, what are we doing? Why are we don't have to deal with this. And so, you know, then we were able to kind of analyze the breeding program too. We're like, okay, what is staying, what is not staying? And so we would just pluck a bunch up and move them up here, reanalyze it, and then pluck a few. And then now we're getting down to the point, I think there's around 55 still down in Alabama, that they're kind of on the, like, do we keep you or do you go? And we literally just started selling his adults and a couple of sub adults. Actually, they're really more like a breeder males that weren't proven yet. Yeah. And we just started selling them. And then we're doing some collabs with some people too. So we just in the last month or so started putting adults out. And so,
but it took us that long, honestly, to get comfortable with it and figure out like what's going on and go through his books and go through his records. She had talked to him a lot. Alicia and Dad, by the way, like they were a team. When those two got together at a show, it made me nervous. Like, oh, I hope she doesn't have any money on her because she's going to come back. Her and Dad would like feed each other. Like, oh, what do you like? Do you like that?
We talk each other into it.
Like, did you see that one on that table? Yeah.
We did not help each other's cause, but then we would come back as a team to deal with the other team components that we just probably pissed off
because you were collabing all the way around, right?
Yeah, but I kind of knew some of his goal snakes, like some that I knew that he wanted to make, and I'm like, okay, we're definitely making those. And then you know, we worked on similar projects on a couple of things, especially the hog noses. We did a lot of collab like ideas. We crossed things over, but we also tried to stay where we didn't buy the same from the same locations, and so that we would have ability to cross over, because you can't inbreed the hog noses like you can the ball pythons. Yeah. So we strategically planned that out for a couple of years at this point. But it's still hard. Like, I mean, it was hard like the first round of ball pythons, adult ball pythons. Like, we're loading these animals up, and I know what some of them meant to him. And I'm like, I'm crying because I'm like, this is wrong. Like, why am I loading his snakes up from his snake room? You know, this just feels like internally wrong. And, but you know, each process, I'm like, this is what we're supposed to be doing. This is how we're supposed to do it. I mean, he would want us to obviously keep doing this. He definitely would not want us to unload these on other people.
So we just, like she was saying earlier, we just stepped in and did what needed to be done, what felt like needed to happen. And every time we go down to the farm and family, Mom's got a ton of family down there. Everybody's related. They come over like, well, it's so neat what y'all are doing. We're so glad y'all are doing this. We're like, yeah, I guess this is a good thing. carrying on the family tradition, but we just don't see it as like, we're not trying to ride his coattails. We're just trying to carry on the family name. Because he loved it. Anybody who met him knew that he loved the hobby. He loved meeting new people, and God, I mean, we're the same. Yeah, we love going to these shows and yakking, talking to people. These podcasts we keep getting on. It's like, we're apparently good at this, and we just enjoy talking to people about snakes.
I think we just like talking to people. I don't know.
Yeah, you guys are very personable. So, and right, you guys love to talk, which is a great thing for podcasts, right? You
know,
I got the
no dead now. Air. No dead, dead air. Right?
That's what Shane was very strict about that before we started. No dead air. But I got to meet your dad a couple times at Tinley was the one that's coming to mind.
Yeah. Awesome.
Nice.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was the Tinley. Is it right? It was right before the pandemic. I think.
Okay. It's been a while then. Okay.
Yeah, been a while, definitely. Okay. But he was always kind of somebody I looked up to in the hobby starting out, you know, seeing the cool ball pythons that your dad would post and watching his journey with Monarch. So meeting him was pretty cool. And now interviewing you guys, this is, for me, this is pretty awesome. So,
sweet. That's cool to know that you knew him. So, I mean, I don't think Shane ever got to meet him, you know, and some of our close friends.
One time.
Okay. Yeah.
So here's my strange Tom story. So I was selling the Chris Eaton fundraiser stickers when he lost his leg.
Yes.
And Tom came up and bought like four or five of them. And I was like, wow, like that's the last person I expected to be over here. But then knowing his reputation, I'm like, no, I do see it. But I was like, this is just weird. Tom Harbin buying Chris Eaton stickers. I'm like, I just never would have thought that day. You know, I don't know. It's just weird. Funny. So
I remember when he came back to the table with those. I'm like, what are you doing? But at the same time, I was stoked that he did it because I was just, I was like, that's funny, you know. But
we leaned on Dad pretty hard. We were like, Dad, this Chris Eaton guy is a pretty cool dude. Like, because we kind of hit it off with Chris early on. So we first met Chris in Knoxville. He came down to show me.
Yeah.
And I asked her, like, who's this guy in this top hat? Like, what is.
Because he was with you and Leviathan.
Y'all have videos going on. Like, what is going on? Like, this is Knoxville.
And we're set up next to Alyssa and Craig. I think Moose was there too. Yeah. And they were recording them. And then y'all walked away with all this recording. I'm like, who are these people? Because we were homeless people. We didn't know the ball python people. We didn't know what was going on. We're still absolutely clueless at that point. But it was just like, what's going on? And then we got invited to dinner. I'm like, yeah, we'll go to dinner with it. Yeah. We don't care. This is awesome. And so it was just kind of funny how that all, like, we all met like that and got to know each other.
So Brian participating here was the guy in the top hat must have been. Oh, man. Well, that's one of the joys about this community, right? Just meeting new people, especially getting out of your own species is interesting, you know, because they each have their own, I'll call it a microclimate, I guess, you know.
Like, it's true.
Yeah, definitely. So
someday we're going to branch out. We want to do like a trophy room's not the right word because that's like dead animals stuck to the wall. We don't want to do that. But just the like more exotic species that we don't want to breed. We just want to look at them, you know, some of the green tree pythons or something like that.
I want a lychee. I wanted a lychee for years. Yeah,
maybe a gaboon viper or something like that.
That's only if we have a terminal illness. I get an eyelash viper and he gets a gaboon if either one of us are like terminal. That's it.
It's if you're going out, you might as well.
I get it.
I don't see how people keep the hots. I mean, so when I was a kid, Dad flew me down to Florida and this was way back when, I mean, I was maybe 12 and he was looking at this guy's collection. He wanted to buy some things and the guy said, do you want to go see the hot stuff? And I'm like, what's that? And he goes, what's the venomous stuff? I'm like, oh, yeah. And he said, yeah, just go on in there. It's that room down the hall. So this guy sends a 12-year-old kid down the room in a hot room. And I walk in, didn't hear anything, didn't see anything. Then all of a sudden, in unison, half this side of the wall started hissing. Half this side started rattling. Like all of my hairs were standing up. I turned around and ran.
Yeah. And this is like early 90s. Okay. So this stuff back then just, you know, it was like la la la. Well, is that the same place y'all went down there and then y'all flew back and so they took their ski clothes.
It's like summertime.
Summertime, wearing ski clothes with all the zippers and stuff on them. And they had snakes in their pockets, like zipped up and stuff flying back.
That's the best way to ship them.
Just stick them in your pocket.
There was no TSA back then. You just walked in.
So was this Tom Crutchfield? I mean, he's the master of smuggling snakes, ain't he?
Do you remember the guy's name?
I can't remember. Now that you've asked, I cannot remember for the life of me. That's too funny. I need to figure that out for that story to bring it full circle.
I think your dad told that story somewhere too at some point. Yeah. We all talked about it, but I'm cracking up because I'm like, this sounds like something Tom would do with his kid. You know?
For real. Definitely.
Make him smuggle snakes back.
Snakes in his pants.
He wasn't really a rule breaker per se, but he wasn't always compliant. Like he would find loopholes and ways to skirt here and there. So.
Right. Rule stretcher.
I like that word. Yeah.
We may or may not be of the same blood.
Hey, you got to get it done.
I got along so well because, like, I'm a veterinarian, and my first year out of veterinary school, I worked for Tom. And he took us to Hawaii because he'd go to Hawaii to get his continuing education because he could write it off. So he's like, hey, I'll take y'all. I'll cover it. We'll, you know, obviously write it off on the business because he's taking one of his employees, which was me. And we get into the first class the first day, and I'm looking through the book. Of course, I just graduated, so this is nothing new. I just got out of veterinary school, so nothing really new, and I'm flipping through it. He leans over to me. He's like, "You know all this stuff?" I said, "Yeah, I think I'm pretty comfortable." He's like, "You good if we just leave after this?" I'm like, "What? Like, just leave? He's like, "Oh, yeah, we got to go get some stuff for Sarah, her free bags of junk from all the vendors out front."
All the swag from
and I said, "How do they know that we get our credits?" He's like, "Oh, they already gave us the paperwork. We can leave now. We don't have to come back to any more." I was like, "This is awesome." That's how I learned how to do continuing education, which is not ideal. But I was like, "This is perfect. I know how to get out of this now."
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, that's a good example right there. Oh, man.
Well, speaking of Tom and education, there is a endowment fund, a scholarship. Yes. Can you guys talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, right after we lost Dad, we didn't know what to do. We knew we didn't want to have a bunch of flowers. We wanted to donate to something. And so we were looking up charities, and we had three or four listed out. Just none of them were really hitting the mark. And my brother piped in and said, "You know, what if we did a scholarship?" I'm like, all of a sudden everybody's like, yeah, let's do that. And so actually, my mom's sister, Cindy, knew somebody at Auburn who was in that department that handled that. And so we contacted Ben. My brother handled almost all of this. Ben did call up Auburn, and they had an endowment set up already. They said, "What do you want to call it? And what's it going to go to?" So it's a scholarship just for somebody going to the University of Auburn's veterinary school. And then we're going to have a selection process where we're going to hopefully pick somebody who has a focus or an interest in exotics.
Yeah.
There's not enough vets in the world, and much less a vet that knows how to take care of the reptiles that we love. So we're going to see if we can help somebody out in need. So we didn't had it. It wasn't pulled together in time to award one this year. So next year will be the first year we can award a scholarship. So
luckily we needed what, 25,000 for it to be considered to be fully endowment. Endowed. And when we did, they did an auction for U.S. ARC.
Yeah.
Helped us with an auction at Daytona. And then they helped us at Dallas and at Tinley. But we hit over 25,000 just between the Daytona and Dallas. I remember telling people, because we were adding it up, we knew we were pretty close. And I remember we were able to announce at the Dallas auction, "Hey, we just hit the endowment, guys. Thank you." And so that makes it a forever thing. Yeah. And then with all the extra contributions through that auction, along with Tinley, I think we ended up, along with other people outside of the auction world, donating, I think it ended up being around 48,000 the last time we checked. And so a huge endowment fund that allows us to be able to actually award a significant scholarship, not just a little rinky dink thing, but something that can really help somebody.
I thought it was going to take like 3 years of yard sales. And
I was like, "We'll sell a monarch once a year and put it in there." I mean, like, it was all these little stupid things that we came up with.
I mean, the reptile community stepped up huge.
Blew it away.
Then friends and family stepped in. So.
And so that's been awesome. And it just, he, of course, he's a veterinarian. And he graduated from Auburn University, and that's why we picked Auburn. And he also was teaching. He had become kind of a guest speaker professor with the reptile group there. And he would go in and teach them about reptile reproduction and medicine. But he actually was supposed to start teaching a specific class that coming semester. So he was technically on board as more of a professor.
He was stoked. He was going to be an Auburn
thrilled,
professor.
Man. He was thrilled.
He was riding high.
That was I think one of his ultimates is to go back to Auburn veterinary, you know, school and teach. And he was getting ready to do it. And he was already doing it, but he was going to be an official professor at that point.
Right.
And we found all these documents he was already writing up and pictures and all kinds of stuff in the computer, which we've saved obviously just so we can remember it. But you know, I remember him talking about that. That was awesome. So the scholarship made so much sense for him.
100%. That is amazing to hear. And even more amazing to hear too, how quickly the community pulls together that.
It's crazy. I mean, it was amazing.
We were blown away. Just blown away. Mom sold a cheesecake at one of the auctions for $800.
Yeah, buddy.
Bawling her eyes out.
She couldn't believe people were spending that kind of money. And you know, I think she had this fear that people were going to forget about Tom. I'm like, who the heck forgets about Tom? I'm like, you know, the community, he made such an impact, a positive impact. And And when that cheesecake went, because it was, she made that cheesecake from scratch too. I mean, that was straight up Harvard cheesecake, and they're delicious. And so, but it was cool that she got to witness a lot of those auctions and see how much the community supported it, how much they loved Tom. So that was a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. So was the cheesecake a weed cheesecake? Is that why it sold for so much? or is that only
sugar?
No, you're getting sugar high.
That's only a California auction. out here at the California auction, you know, the weed.
Everything's
baskets.
Got, yeah. Yeah.
No, we're from the South. We like our diabetes. Every time I go get health checkups now, they're like, are you pre-diabetic? I'm like, why do y'all keep asking me that?
Either I am or not. Yeah. You're the ones running the test.
Right. Yes,
so there's actually a link in the description for the Tom Harbin Endowment scholarship. Do you guys have anything to do with managing it at all or anything? Yeah, or is it
we'll
all
be
through?
Able to be part of, yeah, a part of the process is once we get applications in for it, which they should already be now, we've got applicants coming in. They're going to let us as a family unit help select. And so the criteria, again, veterinary student at Auburn that has a reptile focus, meaning that they're probably in the reptile club. They're already working, maybe doing some assisting work as under reptile, you know, veterinarians, that they have a focus towards reptile medicine. And then they also need to have a financial need. And so we feel like that was important, that it just wasn't going to somebody that already, you had everything paid for. Like, this needs to be somebody that really needs some help.
So. Yeah.
Cool.
That's awesome. That's so awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. That is quite amazing. Well, look forward to hearing about the first candidate that gets accepted through your guys' program. That'll be pretty cool to hear about. So,
yeah. Hopefully we'll be able to kind of do some kind of little interview or something that we'll be able to post some information. We have a YouTube. We haven't done anything on it in a while, but that may be a good time to also like introduce that person so that they can, you know, see the community.
I thought about running them through like a miniature 15 minutes of lame gauntlet, like let them compete, like a marketing competition. See who really wants this thing.
Who really wants this thing? Come on, guys.
It's like, you want to be in this world? This is how you do it.
Right.
You actually read my mind when you guys were talking about it. I was thinking that I was having a fantasy about that in my head. Yeah. Like a little competition. See who's got the most social media savvy and let's get it on, you know?
Yeah. I think we could probably pull that off.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. Add that to the criteria. Yeah.
There you go. I like it. I like that too. Yeah. Make a little game out of it.
Yeah, for sure.
We might have to get that approved through Auburn. I don't know if they allow it.
We don't need approval. We'll just run it on the backside. It'll be all right. Yeah. Well, Tom it is what we call it. We're Tomming it now. We're at the Nashville ARPE. You know that ramp over there? Shane peeled out so quick at the end of the show, but there's a ramp that was right next to the door. And we were parked underneath that cover. Well, this is a big ramp. It's made for walking down. It's not a driving ramp. Well, Josh is like, I'm Tomming it. And he backed this sucker down, squeezed it between the rails because we wanted to get down at the bottom so we weren't dragging the carts up that ramp.
Had about 6 inches of clearance on the side.
And I was like, just come on back. I was like, we're Tomming it. Let's do it.
Keep it straight. Very straight.
We squeezed that sucker down in there. That way our loading went faster. And then we drove right back up it.
Nice. Hell yeah.
Yeah. I was about 15 minutes down the road when it started to rain. And I was like, yep, sucks for them guys.
Yeah, it did. It dropped. You left, and then like people were trying to load. Of course, we were just loading up our stuff at that point. We were letting everybody get out of the way, and people were actually trying to get into their cars, and it just, I mean, the bottom dropped out. I'm like, yeah. And people were just standing outside the door. I'm like, nobody's going anywhere unless they want to get soaked. Yeah. And so we weren't planning on heading out that fast.
We slow pack at the end of shows so we can go through like and re-inventory, put things back where they belong. So we don't have to come home, unload the van and reorganize it again.
Yeah.
And that lets everybody just get out of the way. It takes like an extra 30, 45 minutes to do that. And it's a lot less frantic.
Yeah. And then then most people are out of the way. So we just have a clear path right to the van and we just load straight up instead of having to like, you know, run around everybody.
Yep.
So
yep.
We kind of learned that this year. That's just easier for us to just kind of chill. And we've kind of got a luxury too, because when we leave a show, we just take turns driving back and forth. I mean, it's not like one person that has to drive all the way home. We will take turns driving. So we split it up.
Yeah.
Right.
That's cool. That's really nice. So far with the dog showing world that my wife and I were doing, when I would bring the trailer out, I've been the only one pulling the trailer. Just, yeah. You know, she hasn't learned how to do it yet. So it does make it awkward.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, yeah. Especially when it's big. So.
And maybe all my dog show years has got me conditioned to this situation of like packing and unpacking and traveling in weird hours to get someplace to do weird stuff with animals, you know.
Right.
But the beautiful thing about a dog show versus snake show is snake show, you can kind of wake up late and you don't have to go X the dogs. Like, you know, you're not Xing the snakes. They're in the little containers and you clean up when you get there.
No makeup.
So I remember the dog show, I'd be up at 5 o'clock in the morning walking them, and I'd be up all the way till like 11 or 12 o'clock at night walking them again and Xing them. And so I never got any sleep because I was Xing dogs the whole time. Like, get them in, get them out. And the snakes, I'm like, man, I could sleep like 7 hours at these shows. It's awesome.
Right. I can even have a glass of wine the night before and not be hating myself the next morning.
Around, you know, I don't have to do anything. And so, I don't have to worry about the dogs barking or do anything weird. So it's a different scene for sure.
So is that something that you guys have discussed on other podcasts, is your dog showing stuff? Or
It's been a long time since I think we talked about it.
It comes up. Just how it parallels the snake show world and that it's a different kind of competition. You go there and you're really selling yourself. And then the next thing is the quality of your animals, the health of your animals. In the dog show world, it's pretty much a visual thing, especially like you said, the confirmation. And once humans can compete for a little piece of blue ribbon, the gloves come off.
It gets nuts, man.
But the snake show world is more of a community. It's more of a hangout. Vibe. So we've enjoyed the transition.
And we were tight in the dog world. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, there's like groups of us that would groom together and hang out together. It was still cutthroat in the ring. But it is political. It's a political situation. Like, do you know the judge well enough? Is that judge going to judge the dog, or is it going to judge you? And, if you really wanted a good judge to just look at the dog, you had to know that you had the good dog going in there too. So, or how you present your dog and who's the better handler that day. And so there's a little bit more extra components to it that I guess I got tired of it. I guess, I mean, after 40 years, it kind of wears on you.
We've got boxes of ribbons. We've got dogs in the backyard that are retired, that not even retired. They never got shown. And we know they're champions by looking at them. I mean, they're quality animals. We don't need the ribbon to prove it now. So,
Yeah,
you know what you got. So to fill everybody in, what breed of dog do you guys work with again?
So, collies,
we talked about this in the green room, by the way.
Yeah, the collies are what I started in. So my mom got our first show collie in 1983. And then I ended up saving up my money as a kid. And I bought my first show collie in 1986. And it was a blue merle smooth collie, called her Paisley. And I showed her all myself at 8 years of age. I put her championship on her. And so she was strictly shown by me, and I handled her all the way. I ended up 2 years later putting her in the top 10 in the nation. And then specialed her quite a bit and had puppies out of her and, had bred by puppies and all that kind of stuff. And so that's where it all started. Oh, that's one of our ribbons up there.
Hey, awesome.
Yeah, that's an award of merit at the national, actually it's a national in Pomona, California in 2010, I think, with a 7.5-month-old puppy I just had finished. And everybody said I was crazy for taking her in as a champion at the national, especially. I said, I'm going to do what I want. Well, guess what? She almost won best of opposite, which would have been,
People would have lost their mind. They would have lost their mind.
She broke a lot of records that year because she was the youngest to finish and the collies. And then I think that was still maybe the youngest award of merit in the collies to date that I know of.
You were tomming it before you
knew it. I was tomming it before I knew it. But then, so basically since the mid 80s, we've had collies. We dabbled in smooth fox terriers for probably about 15, 20 years almost.
Oh, okay. We have friends in those.
Shelties. That was a mistake.
I swear Shelties are a fox terrier underneath. You look at their little beady eyes and the way they act.
They're not anything like a collie. They're not a miniature collie. That drives me crazy when I hear that. Yeah. But forever, like since I was a kid, I handled all kinds of stuff. I handled Dobies. I've actually handled a couple of Rotties. Labradors, Samoyeds, Corgis, Dachshunds, Beaglas, Cavaliers.
Man, what's up? No love for the bullies? Come on. You know, I haven't heard a single bully in that list.
What I did heck? Handle a Staffordshire Bull.
Oh, okay.
Years ago. And there was a mini bully that my mom was looking at buying at one point. I never actually took it in the ring, but we had looked at mini bullies as the breed when we were trying to pick my junior showmanship breed. And we were looking at them and beagles and then the smooth fox terriers. I ended up falling in love with this little smooth fox terrier. I named him Doofus. And so he was my dog. And he was, I don't know, I think he was in the sack too long or something, but he was their best dog ever. And so that was how we kind of got started into that as our breed, because I needed a table dog for junior showmanship.
So a quick story on Doofus. When Alicia was in veterinary school, she was having, we call them weirdies, these little episodes where she would kind of face out.
It's probably mild seizures.
It's probably seizures. But Doofus could detect them.
Yeah.
And she would be studying with her books, and he would come over and like lay on the books. And she eventually learned that, okay, if Doofus is laying on me, I'm about to have one of my episodes.
Yeah. So, cause I would wake up and I would just be there and he'd be like laying on me. I'm looking like, what's wrong with me? And then he wouldn't let me take him out on walks and stuff, I guess, when I was having a weirdie. And well, I ended up having a brain tumor. And so probably he knew it, you know, and he really.
That's amazing.
Yeah, he was.
So you didn't call him. I hope you renamed him after. He wasn't Doofus anymore, right?
Yeah, his name was Doofus. And so
we named the tumor is Tommy the tumor.
That's another episode right there.
What a crazy story, though. That's super cool.
Yeah, he was an awesome dog. And so
when we talked to the brain surgeon about it, I said, you're cutting something out of my wife's head. Like, I need to see this thing.
Right.
And I was like, can you like put it in a jar? Let us keep it. He's like, oh,
you're weird. No. Like I am, Josh. Cause I would ask that same question, man.
I guess it's her. She grew it. She should have been able to keep it. Right.
And, yeah. Like they've got to send it off for biopsy though. And make sure it's not a bigger problem. But luckily, the surgeon took his phone into the surgery room. And when he was holding the tumor in his hand, he had one of the extra like people come take a picture of it. So then he texted me the picture of my tumor in his hand. So I thought, oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool. Heck yeah.
We've got a picture to prove that she has a brain. He sent us some pretty gross pictures, but we bonded
with him pretty quickly. So he's pretty cool with sending us crazy pictures. And he gave me his, you know, personal phone number. So I mean, he knew I wasn't gonna abuse it, but he was awesome.
We made a collage of the pictures and she wouldn't let me hang it up. And so it's actually hanging up over the like washer and dryer so you can kind of close the doors and hide it.
Yeah. Oh well.
So not a lot of people are like, what's that? Well, that's Tommy.
Nobody sees it. You know, he gets to see it every once in a while. It's a picture of me like laying in the bed, like with all this crap on my head. And I'm like, where? Why are you taking pictures of me right now?
You got anesthesia face. And Josh is over there snapping shots.
I was like the whole time. She's like, stop it. But I knew she was gorked out of her mind. She couldn't do anything.
I couldn't move. All these damn bags on my legs trying to keep my blood, you know, from moving. So I couldn't get up and move. And so he's doing all this crap.
You guys are an amazing couple. How long have you been together, by the way, if I may ask? Yeah.
05.
What? No, that's not right. 2002 is when we got married, isn't it?
Sure.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. We started dating in 2002 and we got married in 2003.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Okay. We didn't date very long.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Nice.
We weren't engaged for very long. Like we dated because he was still like back and forth between Middle Tennessee and Knoxville when we first started dating. And I was in veterinary school. And then when he proposed, I was like, you know, when are we going to do this? Cause I've got this little window in the summer between, you know, I guess it was between second and third year. And I said, and then third year blurs into fourth year. And then I'm a vet. And then I don't know what the hell's going on. And so we decided once we got engaged, we're like, I guess you're it. Let's just get married this summer. And so we made it happen.
Yes, you're it. Oh, my heart. That's so sweet.
Not very romantic.
I caught that too, Josh. I'm like, I guess you're it. Yeah.
I still had a brain tumor back then, guys.
Wait, so is the yes even legal? Like, yeah, was that?
Yeah. I was on some weird medications, but it still counts.
I had a window of opportunity.
Totally joking, but it kind of, you guys show that you know you've been together a long time. You work well. I love the sense of humor. My wife and I have been with each other quite a long time, and yeah. We'll kind of throw some jokes around like that, and people are looking at us like, "You guys all right? Yeah. Oh, we've been with each other over 20 years. This is nothing."
Yeah. Oh, you should see us behind the scenes. It gets crazy as far as our joking with each other. So it gets out of control sometimes, but that's all right.
I love it. Yeah, that's what my wife's in chat right now. She had just thrown up that comment earlier. I think it'd be fun to do a best in show type at the reptile shows. And
you
know, they do that at some of the other countries, right? We've seen some of the
I've heard of them doing that.
That's what Bob Vu was saying. They just came back from Japan and they do like some kind of awards and things. I think we should throw that in here. I think it'd be cool for that to go.
I think so.
Yeah. I think as an option at some of the shows, it would make sense. I don't think, you know, it's definitely not something that I would want to see like it become a part of it. But I think if there was like an add-on that you can participate if you want, or if you don't want, you don't have to participate at all. I think it could be pretty cool. You know,
I think
it would help people learn more about specific morphs or specific species or like, you know, what they're supposed to look like and kind of focus more on a standard to a certain degree. So
I was going to say it also, you know, it's kind of, it's something else for the vendors to kind of get excited about, you know what I mean? And that drives a little bit of competition, which is good.
Definitely.
Something. Who knows? You guys know Bob, I heard. So throw it in there. Say, hey, Bob, you guys should do this at your shows.
Yeah. You need to do this, Bob. Do it.
Yeah.
For sure.
I've been trying to lean on him. I want to get my hands on some of those collectibles he's got, like some of the ball card things, but it's like ball python ball cards. Like,
I guess they came out like in,
it's a long time ago, like 2005 or something.
Yeah. They're like really old. They came really out with old. Ball python.
Yeah.
My dad was a huge ball card collector. So I remember chasing down packs and going to you could go to collectible stores back in the day. You didn't buy anything online. And
I did. I had my stint in the ball cards as well. And going to the shop was so much fun, right?
Yes.
It's like the candy store. You're just like opening those packs till you smell it. It's like a unique smell.
Well, the biggest trouble I got in as a kid, my buddy Jason Husky came over and we opened up some of Dad's packs, unopened packs of ball cards, just to get the bubble gum out of it.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
This is like 50-year-old bubble gum at this point. It's like chewing on a mummy. I think Dad was so mad he didn't know what to do with us, and he sent Jason home, and I got a pretty good lecturing, but I think Dad truly realized we didn't know what we were doing.
Yeah, right.
We were just kids that knew where candy was, and we were going after it.
Yeah.
Hopefully he pulled at least one decent card out of
the pack. I hope he found a good one out of that.
Exactly.
It was a junk pack. There was nothing good in it. So.
He's wanting to sell the pack as like a pack, you know, like
you
don't know what you're going to get. And then ding and dong here went in there getting cheap bubble gum out of it. So
that gum was so bad.
The Topps gum was horrible. It was like
even a brand new pack wasn't good, much less a
really old one,
old school one.
Petrified gum. Yeah,
that's hilarious.
It's probably drier than cracker juice. You know,
yeah, it probably just broke into like crackers.
Exactly.
Man, Shane is learning a whole new language down in Tennessee, saying stuff.
I'm telling you, man, I'm becoming Southern. I'm telling you.
He's doing a good job. I'm pretty proud of his progression.
He was a misplaced Southerner. He didn't know it. He finally found his way home.
See how welcoming they are? It's like totally different than the West Coast.
Yeah, exactly, man. We're just like, get out of here, Shane. And then he goes and finds a new family, man.
Oh, man. Tennessee has gotten crowded. I mean, it's a great place to live. We love it here. And it's grown up quick. They put two huge apartment complexes on our exit that we get off at. And they had to throw in two more like stoplights and feels like a big town almost.
It's getting bigger.
Yeah. Californians. We yeah. invade
it
everywhere.
It is a lot of Californians and then New Englanders. That yeah. seems to be the biggest influx. At the veterinary clinic that I work at, you know, we have a lot of people come in with new animals, or there are new people in the town, and they're like, oh, where are you from? They're like, California. I'm like, oh yeah, I know some people from California. Or it's, you know, like New York or New Hampshire or something like that. And so it's a very common group of locations they're coming from.
It's weird. We'll go like going down the road now and people honk. Like, it's weird. Like,
are you not supposed to honk here? Yeah, yeah. No honking allowed.
Well, they're just saying hello. Right? Okay. That's it. That's all they're doing. In California, we say hello all the time.
A lot, so. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, she usually has a finger involved with it,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. Way, yeah.
If, yeah. If you're not swerving, it's normally followed up with the finger, for sure.
I wave and smile at them, the like, biggest yeah, smile I can.
Yeah, we like way back.
I hope this pisses you off, you jerk. Yeah.
That is funny. Well, I mean, that's how it goes out here. You got to be... got to be ruthless on the roads or you get ran over out here in Cali.
Sounds yeah, like for it. Sure. Oh, man. I honked my horn so much when I worked in LA, the horn on my Tundra stopped working.
Oh my gosh.
You blew it out.
Good yeah, gracious.
It just stopped working.
I didn't know that horn could rear out. Oops.
That's hilarious.
That's awesome.
So, you said you were a vet. Are you kind of like the cat dog type vet? Yeah. Do you also do exotics?
Yeah,
as well?
I you know, 99% of what I do at this point is dog and cat. When I first got out of veterinary school, I did work for Tom for a year, commuted back to Middle Tennessee just to learn from him. And he would do a few exotics here and there. There wasn't a huge number in Middle Tennessee, but he would do them. And then we would do some pocket pit type of exotics too. And then I ended up working for a guy here in Knoxville for about 3 years that did a lot more exotics. So we saw birds and a lot of pocket pets, ferrets, you know, all those kind of things, mm-hmm. some exotic cats, and we'd see reptiles through there. Then I ended up, the economy tanked and he couldn't afford to keep me anymore. So I ended up doing mobile spay neuter for years. And so I basically, spayed and neutered while I was on that mobile for like 9 years, almost 10 years, like 36,000 something. They gave me the number when wow. when I left. It was a lot. And so while I was doing that, I really, you don't see exotics while you're doing that. So I kind of got away from that. And then the guy that I work for now, I guess I've been there, what, 11, 12 years now.
Yeah.
And he does not like snakes. And so we'll there for a while. I see rabbits every once in a while. And I'll see our staff's exotics. Like I'll take care of their stuff. But then like I had this one rabbit pit that I got real attached to. And I told the girls up front, I said, when this one dies, I'm not seeing more rabbits. Cause they always make my eyes itch and sneeze and stuff like that. So I just, and then he passed away and I was like, okay, I'm done. I'm done with rabbits. And so I don't really see any exotics now. I help people in the background with consulting with their reptiles. And so I try not to act like a reptile vet, but I do know a little bit of stuff enough to help people with the species that I'm comfortable with. I'm not going to go jump off into retic land or boa land or anything like that. If I haven't kept it, I'm probably not going to advise too much on it. So,
right. I gotcha. Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, the exotics I've heard talking to a few vets around here. I mean, it's a whole specialty to get
oh, yeah.
into.
And, a lot.
And it's yeah. a lot, right.
It's a lot. Right. I mean, you think about the birds, they're their own little thing. And right. you got your pocket pets, they're their own little thing. And then you get into the reptile world where you got bearded dragons, geckos, you got monitors, you got all these all different pythons. I mean, you just can't just say you know all that stuff. And there's so much different variation of medications that can be used. Turtles are a whole nother mess when it comes to medicines. So you have to really be able to say, okay, yes, I will work on that or I won't work on that and just be comfortable with it, being okay with telling somebody, I just don't know. And so that's kind of where I've decided I want to draw the line. Also, for all the years that I was in the dog show world, I'd go to the dog show and I could not be a vet, you know? And so it was like,
hey,
can
you look at this real quick? Or, hey, I've got this bump. What's going on?
You know, this one's got diarrhea. This is this. And that. So I'd leave to go get to take a break from being a vet on my weekends to go show dogs. And then I'm
a you'd vet. End up treating more dogs at the show than you did all week at the vet.
Yeah. And then people would get mad when I'm like out of state and I'm not licensed in that state. I said, I cannot do anything to your animal. I can't. Right. I legally can't. Well, why won't you do it? You know, and I would just hear that crap all the time. And I'm like, you know what? I'm tired of this crap. And so that was one of the other reasons that I didn't want to come into the reptile world saying, hey, I'm a reptile vet, you know, or anything like that. It's like I'm all about helping people as much as I can. But, right. you know, I'm not like Tom would have animals shipped into him, you know, to do egg removals and, you know, I'm impaction issues and all that kind of stuff. I have no desire to go to that level. I don't want to turn it into that vet world that kind of added another layer of why I got out of the dog show world.
So, that was the nail in the coffin for showing dogs for her. Was it just, it was work everywhere she went. It was always vet. So we're trying to pump the brakes on it with the reptile world.
That makes sense, right? Because, I mean, you do some of these things for relaxation, a reprieve away from your daily job. And if it's just going to be the same thing, well, that defeats the purpose.
It defeats the purpose, so, yeah. And being a vet, it's not a walk in the park, you know? And so, I mean, it's like you've got to have a downtime from doing that because it is an emotional strain. And they're long, tiring days, you know, roller coaster ride of seeing a puppy and then euthanizing a 15-year-old family pet, you know, and then you got to pull your crap together and then go, you know, see, you know, a 4-year-old dog for their yearly. And then you've got this one that's got cancer. And so, I mean, it's a lot of roller coaster ride through the day. So
you were really into wine there for a while.
I drank a lot.
I don't blame you, you know? Yeah.
He was bad. I mean, there was a point that I'd send him a message like, I'm finally and I'd blankety blank off. And, you know, I'd already have like a 12-hour day, you know, and no lunch break and just exhausted. And so I'd come home and there's like my heating pad and then a glass of wine and some kind of like, you know, a bag of potato chips.
I had a therapy kit laid out.
Right.
And I would just knock myself out. I mean,
good job, Josh. Good job.
So, yeah. He did take care of me. So, but now, I mean, I haven't had to have a drink in a long time.
Doing good. Something's working.
It's better. So.
Definitely. So that means everyone listening, don't send the Harbin account like pictures of your snakes that are sick and stuff. She's you know, not.
It's always a cloaca or a butthole, whatever it is.
It's like one.
But even like dog pictures, like look at this thing's butt or poop. I don't get anything that's like it's nothing pretty.
Nothing cute, right? It's all.
No, I don't mind helping, but there is a point that I'm like, I can't drown myself with vet medicine in the reptile world. First of all, I don't consider myself a reptile vet. And second, I want this to still be, you know, my kind of off time for being a vet. Although now it seems to be I do this more than I do vet work, but it's flipped a little bit, but it's been good. It's been a good flip.
Yeah. So. Yeah, that's good. I mean, to just totally dive in on the vet question, then, since you said you loved how much, you know, getting these types of questions, what about the NexGard for mite treatment? Have you?
You know, I actually would like to run some of my own experiments with that. I think it and even Bravecto, which is a longer acting, we call them Aner drugs, which falls in the class that NexGard is in. It all makes sense how it works. And I think right now we're having to extrapolate doses, which is fine. That's how we do most reptile medicine. We're having to utilize like, okay, this is how they're going to metabolize it, you know, mgs per kg over here. Mm-hmm. The thing is we're dealing with a whole different process in a cold-blooded animal. And so the fact that the few studies I've read have been a positive, I think that could be huge for the reptile industry. Mm-hmm. What I want to do now, though, is I want to try it in some colubrids and some hognose, you know, those kind of things, because that's a whole nother step. Pythons can tolerate a lot of crap. I mean, they just, they can tolerate it. But we know that there's a lot of sensitivities in hogs and in colubrids in general. And so I think that's the next level of like, how do we do that research and how do we creep up on finding an effective dose that doesn't hurt the animal, but then also be able to turn around and test that animal with actual mites to verify that it's functionally working. It's not something I really want to bring into my house is a bunch of reptile mites.
Yeah, you don't, right, exactly.
Like, that's the thing is, like, you know, you have to have a test component, a control to be able to verify that it's functionally the right dose to get rid of those mites, but that you're also not causing a toxicity in your reptile at that point. So
I'm excited
about it because I've read some extra work on that. And I'm like, you know, this could be revolutionary. It's been excellent for the dog world. I remember growing up in vet medicine and even, I don't know what, 15 years ago, 10 to 15 years ago, an animal would come in with Demodex mites. And anybody that's had dogs or bred dogs probably knows what Demodex mites are. They're mites that live in the follicle base, and you see it break in puppies, and it's usually because their immune system is kind of downregulated. These mites are already living there. They get an overgrowth of the mite, and then you start seeing hair loss and skin irritation and all that kind of stuff on their faces and legs. Well, then when NexGard and Bravecto and those came around, we start giving NexGard to those puppies when they're 3 months old, 4 months old, and I hardly ever see Demodex now because NexGard and Bravecto and those cover those mites. And so now we've gotten rid of a disease to a certain degree that we dealt with almost on a daily basis in some common. Very, very common. And so now we just, you know, I see Demodex once every 6 months where I used to see it once every day because we now have controlled it with NexGard and Bravecto.
Right.
When she worked on the spay and neuter clinic, a lot of people would want like kind of backyard medicine tips. And one guy came up and said, "Hey, I my dog had that mange and I dipped it in the used motor oil and that fixed it right up." She came and asked me, she's like, "What is the deal? Why does it have to be used motor oil?
Why is it used?"
And I'm like, "Honey, the good oil goes in the truck. The used oil goes on the dog." She's like, "Are you kidding me?"
I'm
like,
"This is ridiculous."
He's environmentally conscious people around here.
Yeah, we're recycling at that point. I guess if someone takes the mite, you know, then it must work. But
Shane, write that down. That's the East Tennessee.
It's
thing.
East Tennessee. That's
mental note added.
Used motor oil. I mean, you have to use that. But
yeah, so next to your duct tape. You got used motor oil.
Exactly.
I mean, that could be the next generation of mite treatment right there. Used motor oil. I mean,
dip them in mites motor oil.
You guys heard it first on Reptiles Unplugged, right there. Wait a second. Oh, be careful.
to qualify my statements, I actually went to vet school.
God, here we go.
Let's hear
it. They said, "Get out of here. You don't belong.
Go away."
So I did.
They said, "You're not our type of person. Yeah, please leave, sir." What did you do to earn that? Can you share it on live YouTube?
I did poorly, is what I did. Actually, I got 1A in vet school, and that was in surgery.
Yeah.
It's really what I wanted to do. I wanted to do the cutting and sewing part of it.
I just want to skip all the other stuff, though.
Yeah, that whole like medicine and bio stuff. That wasn't me.
But it was funny because he got in and he was 2 years behind me. So I was the third year and he was the first year. And, you know, by the time you're third year, you're kind of psychotic because you've just done nothing but go to school constantly and you're pale and pasty and weird looking and malnourished and just tired. And I remember telling him, like, "Hey, if you get into a problem in this class, just, you know, talk to me. I think I could help you with it." Well, he would study in his room and I'd study in a different spot of the house. And he'd just get so quiet. And that's just not him. And I'm like, "What is he doing in there?" And I'd go in and he'd have his little notebook up and he'd be just going to town. And then finally one day I went in there, I'm like, "What are you even looking at?" And I pushed the notebook down and he's got a Popular Mechanics magazine inside the notebook hiding it from me. So it looks like he's studying. And the whole time he's been reading this freaking magazine. I'm like, "This is why you're failing out."
I didn't want to get in trouble. truly my heart wasn't in it. Grew up in a vet clinic with dad and I loved the people. I loved working with animals. And so I just kind of followed the family footsteps, but it took me getting into vet school to realize like, I truly don't need to be here. And so I want to do trades after that. I'm like, "Screw this white collar crap. I'm blue collar from here on out." And went to machine school, learned how to be a machinist and freaking loved it. Yeah. I mean, I took off like a duck to water in it. And, did the machining for about a decade. And all along the way, I kept working with like engineers and mechanical designers. And I said, I want to do that now.
Yeah.
So I went back to school again in my 30s and got a degree in mechanical engineering technology. And now I do mechanical design at Oak Ridge National Laboratory. So,
oh, that's super cool.
And now, like, what he works on is the research for the machines in machining. So it's it all came full circle. And so I remember when they asked him to leave veterinary school. I mean, they told him to leave. Like,
it's
you're
like,
done.
It's like arm twisting. Like,
you need to go ahead and leave because we're not letting you back in next semester. Yeah. It's basically what it was. And I remember sitting with him at dinner. I said, babe, you know, if I wasn't going to be a vet and your dad wasn't already a vet and you could just be, it didn't matter what kind of money. Cause it's not like you make money being a vet anyway. We don't have a lot of money. It's not like being a doctor or something. I said, if money didn't matter, all this stuff didn't matter, what would you do? He's like, I would build things. And I'm like, okay, what do you build? And he's like, well, I want to work with metal or, you know, I was like, okay, what are those people? You know, I didn't even know what these people were. And that's when he found the machine.
Who are the people
that do this? You know, like, what do you call that? Like, I've never heard of these words. And when he got into it, I mean, he just like, it, I can't tell you, it was like, boom, like it just went off. Like he just went right to it. He understood it. He excelled at it. And it was cool to see him hit that check mark. Like, this is where I'm supposed to be. And then him now being able to work back in machining, but actually being able to engineer the process is just like, it's pretty crazy to
see
that.
It's been fun. It's been fun to tell that story to people, you know, that are scared that they're at a certain stage in life and they're not as successful as they think they should be. I'm like, start over, pivot, try again.
Right.
And I'll tell them all the screw ups I've done. I'm like,
totally.
Quit comparing yourself to Facebook or Instagram or TikTok. Like, just find your own way. Change course as many times as you have to.
I think that's great advice, right? Yeah, don't get caught up on what others' expectations are, possibly, exactly. Right? Like, deal with. Did you feel like that a lot, Josh? Having a dad that was kind of marching along, had a name in the community.
He never pressured. Actually, several times growing up, Dad asked me, like, you sure you want to be a vet? And he was trying to politely guide me. And I was like, I definitely want to be a vet. And it took me 3 times to get into vet school. So that the world was telling me, like, you don't need to do this. But I was stubborn.
I think it was all internal pressure from himself, thinking this expectation was being put on him by everybody around him. And nobody expected that. But he had made that in his head.
Yeah.
And he had to get that out of his head to be like, I can do these other things and excel at them and still have a great life. And so
what it allowed me to do is like fully focus on my next career. Cause had I gone into engineering right out of high school, I would always wonder like, man, I should have been a vet. You know, I should have worked with Dad. Yeah. Probably a little bit of regret, but having actually made it in, realized I definitely don't want to do this. It allowed me to go full force into the engineering field. So.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah, exactly.
And I may get into like psychology in a couple of years. I don't know. I may just totally pivot again. Do food technology.
I told him when he
graduated a few years ago,
like finally graduated in his early 40s with school. He's like, well, what if I go? I said, you're not going back to school. We're done. Like, I'm done with this crap. Like, you've been in school ever since I've known you. Nope. I think we need to stay out of school now. And so I think he's in a good place though. He doesn't need to go back to school.
But I like it. You know, you're seeking new knowledge. You want to learn new stuff, right?
Yeah,
like
that's totally.
Helped me see opportunities in the hobby, like stuff that needs to be made, stuff that needs to be designed. I know Shane keeps showing me like, hey, what do you think of this product? I'm like, that's 90% there. It needs a few tweaks. Like we can fix it. If you want to buy that, we'll tweak it and make it right.
Yeah.
Before I buy something that I'm not familiar with, I'm like, Josh, take a look at this, man. Like, am I not seeing something here? And he's like, oh, yeah. I mean, really, they're a power couple. It's like MacGyver and Dr. Quinn, medicine woman. Like, they know it all right there, you know?
It sounds like it. Power couple for sure. That's the dream team right there.
We tell the people to come up with questions like, if it bleeds, ask her. And if it rusts, ask me.
Yeah. We'll figure it out. Yeah.
You guys need your own shirts at the
So most people came and chased me down, you know, after Dad died, just assuming I was the snake person. And honestly, Alicia was stronger in it than me initially. And I'm still catching up to her. her and dad being veterinarians, like, they do the genetics, the health, like, man, they just got it and it clicked. And, you know, I just like hammers and rocks. So I'm having to, I'm getting there. I'll look at something and go, hey, I like that. What is it? And she'll decide.
I'll try to teach it to him and like explain like what the morph is. And so we've, you know, we've gotten clutches out and I've stacked them out in front of him. I'm like, okay, this is what we've got. Mm-hmm. This is what's in this breeding. I'm like, here's, let's go up through the base gene. And so it's helping me like reaffirm what I've learned by teaching him. Yeah. And so it's really added up. And then he is better at what we have. Like, okay, there's some genes out there neither one of us could ID if it slapped us in the face. And that's fine. We're not working with that gene. And so if it's not something that gets us both excited, like, oh boy, I really like that, then we're probably not going to pursue it anyway, because we both want to enjoy what we're looking at. I learned that in the dog world, because when I showed people's dogs, I'm like, God dang it, this thing is freaking ugly. I could tell that I wasn't presenting it well. Right. And so, you know, I feel like for us, we already learned that in the dog world, like it had to have a certain look or I wasn't going to groom it and show it. It's just period. And so when I bred stuff, it was very specific look. And when we got into the snake stuff, it's like, we both have to want to look at that animal, you know, to appreciate it. So then we also are better, you know, promoters of that more for that snake or whatever it may be. And so, luckily or unluckily, I don't know. Yeah. We both like a lot of the same stuff. So that's probably dangerous. Cause then I'm like, hey, look at this. He's like, oh yeah, I like it. Yeah. So then we buy it. Like,
But at least that way, you know, you guys are on a focus. Cause if you both liked individual things, man, you'd need double the space, you know?
Yeah. So. We'd have a lot of stuff flopping around everywhere, but I think, that does kind of add a little extra oomph for us.
Yeah.
To be honest, we're really, truly on the same team because we're really working towards the same focuses.
Yeah. So, I know, you know, you guys' main focus was hog nose. But once, Josh, you know, your dad, Tom's collection kind of came over to you guys having a heavy influence in Monarch, is that where you guys see yourself at, like a five, you know, cause with breeding, we're always looking ahead several years. So is that where you're still going to go, is kind of the Monarch route and bringing stuff in there? Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. We like started off with hogs and we were kind of thinking about getting a few ball pythons just to kind of dabble. And we couldn't afford dad's Monarchs. We were like, that's too much money. And so we're like, you know, we'll just get the Ultramel for now and start with that. And we mentioned that one time in front of dad and he goes, no. Y'all are Monarch people.
Like, oh my God.
he shut that down.
I was shut down.
We wanted Monarch. We definitely wanted Monarch. And Ultramel is not bad. It's kind of fun to play the like Ford versus Chevy, the Monarch versus Ultramel. They're two different genes and you work them differently. But we do prefer the Monarch because they're so dang clean. Like the contrast is high. There's some things that they pair really well with. There's some things that they kind of do okay with, and that's every gene out there we mess with. There's like super power combos that work great and other ones don't. But
yeah, and when we first were getting into ball pythons, we were going to have a small portion. I think even we said like at one point 80% was probably going to be hogs and 20% ball pythons, and there was going to be a few corn snakes sprinkled in there. That's different now, you know, obviously taking care of Tom's, it's pretty much 50-50 right now. But when we were starting into the ball pythons, we both loved banana stuff. We loved, you know, we both like the Krypton kind of look. And so we kind of started purchasing into that. Then we also like Dreamsicles, and that's probably the one that got both of us like, okay, we're going to do Dreamsicle stuff. And so,
I mean, they're orange and white. I mean,
like,
I see you guys over there.
We're very, very consistent, you know, in our opinion. And so we'd already kind of just slightly invested in some animals specifically for like Dreamsicle, to like Holy Grail and Grail, you know, combinations and things like that. And then advancing some of our clown and Krypton and DG clown. And then we also had a little bit of G-stripe clown, not as much as I'd like, but a little bit of that. And so then when Tom passed away, then we really had to kind of like pare down, like, okay, we can't work a bajillion projects. So now what we're looking at is we're taking the Monarch into some of those projects. Now, the Dreamsicle, Grail, Holy Grail, that's staying its own thing, obviously. Yeah. Now we're putting DG Clown in with the Monarch, animals. So we're starting to blend some of this stuff so that we can get even more intense Monarch combinations down the way. It's going to be a next level in the next couple of years. So yeah.
We hit a Leopard Clown Monarch, boy, that I just pull the tub open and stare at it. Like, it's just one of those. Beautiful. You can't look away.
Yeah, he's just so gorgeous. He's so clean, so contrasty, which is what we like. We like that heavy contrast and just super, super clean. And so to be able to kind of learn that gene better, being able to look at the collection, that's helped a lot. And then just meeting more people that work with those genes. And then as we've learned this stuff, we're like, okay, we definitely want to put more of this in there, but this gene doesn't make sense to put in there. And so we're learning to peel apart the collection a little bit better and determine what direction we're going to go.
As kind of the torchbearers of Monarch, what's one gene that you would recommend to stay away from that you've just seen not work with Monarch?
So as much as we love banana, do not put banana in it. Right. They look like really pale ultramels.
Whoa, shots fired on the ultramarine.
A cleaner version of it, but I still like the snake. It's here and he's not going anywhere. And so we've ended up using him a different direction just to try to pull banana, mix in with there. But, I would never pair it with an ultramel. I mean, what good is that? I think, there's some people out there that have worked albino, and I think people even are starting to work lavender albino in it. I have seen pictures of albino monarchs, which are pretty impressive. Now they're in Europe. And so now what does it turn out as an adult? I don't know. I only got to see subadult and baby pictures, how that could be, meh. And so there's some people going to be working on albino with monarch. So we'll be able to watch that over the next few years. The problem is people have to remember that monarch will obliterate pattern. So if you look at a monarch G stripe, I think it's still beautiful, but that G stripe is gone. So
no stripe.
Yeah. It's just smeared it all over the place.
And
so
now
monarch does color and pattern.
Yeah, definitely. Right. But it cleans things up too. So you get this cleaning.
So we've got an ivory monarch that if you hold it in the light, you can see the monarch pattern popping through the ivory.
Yeah. She's an ivory pied monarch actually.
So under black light, you can kind of,
you don't even have to put a backlight. You hold her just in the right light and you can see her monarch popping out of her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
It's pretty cool. I wish you could catch it on video. We've tried it on video, but you can't see it. But, there's not a lot of things I wouldn't try it with though.
I'm a puzzle guy. Has Monarch Puzzle been produced?
But there's several people working on it, including us. I think that would be fabulous. Especially if you get strong, like weirdo gene in there to add even more intensity. I just don't want Monarch to mess up the puzzle. That's what I
right. If it fights with the pattern manipulation too much. Yeah. Right. So going back to the banana Monarch, what was your vision when you did that pairing? Where did you think it was going?
Well, and Tom actually did that pairing and he wanted to see what would happen with it. So I don't want to act like it's a bad gene. So when this banana monarch popped out, at first you couldn't tell what exactly it was. Okay. And as it aged, then you could start seeing how the monarch was influencing it, but you knew that it was banana eventually. And it never got any spots, no banana spots whatsoever. So it's extremely clean. And of course it is clean overall. And there are tones of caramel in it that are trying to pop out from the monarch, trying to pull itself out of it. But the banana unfortunately toned it down. So it looks like a really clean, light ultramel.
Ultramel. Okay. Yeah, I gotcha.
Not bad.
Yeah. Because in my head, when I would try and see it before seeing it, I would think maybe the same thing. Banana would be amping up some of the tones. But
a little bit of oranges when it was a baby popped out more. But
into adult, it would lose and fade, which then it's kind of like, duh, that's exactly what banana does in almost any gene it touches, right?
Exactly. Yeah, right. It fades out. So
totally.
But still a very beautiful animal, and he's still being utilized, just kind of in a different direction, maybe, to than what Tom would have done. And which I know we're doing some weird stuff that he's probably would.
You think hypo would help that? Maybe. Mm-hmm. Are you a hypo? You think hypo coming in with?
You know, I have heard of hypo being worked with it, but I haven't seen a visual hypo monarch yet. It'll be interesting to see. But my concern is, I love hypo too, and he does too. I just don't know what it's going to do. Like, is it going to tone it down too much? You know.
But I think with Ultramel, we saw that it actually helped bring out some of the lavender kind of ish tone. Maybe it could do that a little more, since Monarch offers a better contrasting than Ultramel. You know,
it could. It could. Yeah. And I think there's a friend of ours that has hypo puzzle that he's working into the Monarch. He's just going to go ahead and stack it all together, which I think hypo puzzle is fabulous.
Love it. I'm working that project pretty heavy.
Absolutely gorgeous. That's one of the projects about 3 years ago we were looking into getting into, because we both liked it so much. And then we bought some more hog noses and we're like,
I know how that goes. You're like all into it, but then you see something else and it's like squirrel. Oh man, my budget's gone for the year.
Well, the hogs, I mean, they take up a third of the space that the ball pythons do, and it's smaller food. They're a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But they don't have the genetic diversity that ball pythons do. So it's kind of a,
it's a toss up. I mean, a lot of people ask us, like, why we got into ball pythons. I'm like, specifically because of the genetic diversity. It's not like they're like a amazing personality or anything. And so, you know, I think they're easy and they're great for people that want to get started, because I think there's so much information out there. But as far as, like, you know, the hogs are just entertaining. I can't speak any different, because they are entertaining, but there isn't nearly as much genetic complexity with it. And so I think the challenge of the ball pythons with their genetics is really what sucked me in, for sure. So
yeah, I feel you on that. And that's kind of what brought me really devoted into the ball pythons as well, was the genetic diversity and kind of playing that game. But with the hog noses, man, you get to act pretty cool. You're caring for hots over there, guys. Your life is on the line every night.
I've been attacked a few times, you know. Luckily, I've not had any bad reactions or anything, but
gangs of hog nose all came after you.
we tell people, like, we've actually talked people out of buying hognose, because we can see they've got a fairly young kid with them. Like, I know they're cute. I know you've seen these on the social medias. I was like, probably not the best first pet for a young child. The young child sees a small snake that's small like them, and they want the size. We try to push them to a corn snake.
If they want something really simple, that's usually a good starter species. And so, you know, if they've got some age on them, you know, the kids are older and they understand, and the parent understands what they're getting into, then we're like, okay, this, y'all could totally do this. But
we tell the parent, like, you know, this is your snake, right? You're gonna let the kid pretend to care for it, but it's yours. Yeah. Like, you're responsible. Oh,
yeah. Just like that puppy, parents.
Exactly. You know,
you know, one of the best things we did, and it was kind of by accident, because we were asked to be on the passport. So whenever Snake Discovery sets up at a show, they'll be like the scavenger hunt. And so they asked us to be one of the stops. And so we said, heck yeah, we want to be on that. So we brought along a miniature zoo. So we brought some animals for let everybody else hold.
Yeah.
And man, that's been a hit.
Yeah.
And so when somebody says, can I hold a snake? We're like, yeah, right over here.
This one over here.
Here's a corn snake. Here's a ball python. Here's a hog nose. Adults. Yeah. So they can see what they grow into. And we show what a appropriate enclosure is size-wise, how to set up the thermostat and the heat tape, and just walk through all that. Because, you know, you can read a care sheet. Like, we know what all the words mean. But a first-timer, they don't know what this crap is. What do you mean a thermostat? They don't know. Like a nest? What are you supposed to?
Yeah,
like, right, and this goes on the outside. Yeah. Well, how does it heat them? Doesn't it got to go on the inside? Yeah, totally.
Yeah, that's always confusing.
And what does substrate mean? And what are you talking?
What do you mean hog nose don't go on sand?
And so we even have like a makeshift one that's like a little Tupperware container that, or I guess like a shoebox per se, that has clip lids on it that we've drilled holes into. We're like, this is actually sufficient starter thing for a baby hognose, because they don't need a big enclosure, and you need to give them time and keep them in a smaller space initially. And so people see they're like, well, we can make that, we can do that. And so that does help a lot of people get the correct starter size for their hog babies. So,
yeah. And I think that's, yeah, that's so awesome. You guys are doing the education, because that's a huge portion of this, right? Like,
oh yeah.
You know, people, like you said, can read about it or whatever, but seeing it, handling it in person, I think is one of the best ways to kind of not only get people hooked, but also set expectations, right?
Exactly.
Like, yeah, you may go on Facebook and see these elaborate, like cool looking, you know, yeah, everything all set up. But in reality, if you start simple, learn your animal first, grow into it, it's going to be a way better experience, right? Definitely. Not only for your animal, but for you too.
So. Yeah, it makes it a positive experience for that person, mm-hmm, that then feeds those people around them, that it promotes the industry better. Instead of somebody just getting a little snake that's underfed, never told how to take care of it, they throw it into some kind of container, it dies, you know, and then they're like, ah, the snake people, the snakes are awful, don't get a snake. And so then you get the negative publicity if you're not promoting the positive direction so everybody can succeed. And so that's our goal, is trying to educate people to make sure that it is a positive experience that spreads.
Right. Right. Well, hats off to you guys out there putting the time into that, because it really, I think that is, you know, the true win right there. Just kind of bringing it back to the dog world as well. That's how we win over there. Same thing as education, right?
Yes.
And so it applies over here to animals outside of kind of the normal, especially for those type of animals. So
definitely,
that's cool. Yeah. Well, we do try and be respectful of everybody's time. We try and keep it to an hour, but our conversation was going so well, we kind of went a little over.
Did we get through your list, Shane?
Yeah, I know. Shane had this huge list, man.
we covered most of it. I didn't even have to draw off the list. So we're good.
Awesome. Awesome. Before we get wrapping up though, is there anything, here, I'll put it back on that screen. Anything that you guys want to cover before we kind of, you know, get wrapping up, something that maybe we didn't talk about?
No, usually we try to bring up the scholarship, but y'all hit off that pretty early on. So, that's awesome. Appreciate y'all doing that.
Yeah.
But to remind everybody, we do have a link in the description, about that scholarship. And if you have any questions, reach out to the Harbins or myself for Shane, and we can help get you more information about it.
Definitely.
Yeah,
something that we would love to promote over here. So that's pretty cool. All right, well, Shane, do you got anything, any other
no, thank you everyone for being here, everyone in the chat, and thank you Harbins for taking the time to hang out with us. And thank you.
Anytime.
Thanks for having us. It's been fun.
All right, man. Well, we're going to go ahead and end the show here. So we'll have our little outro. Again, appreciate everybody's time stopping by with us tonight. Reach out if you guys have any comments about how we can improve the show, anything good we did. We'd love to appreciate and hear from you guys. So, all right, later.
Thanks.